cast on the West Coast have most recently focused in on individual popular songs. Today, Carlos Hagen will speak on Latin American and Hispanic song.
I would say a few words about this production that I do, you know. I like to call them essays in sound because that's what basically they are. I produce these essays on a number of topics. I like to call them sub-series. For example, Latin American music, or I'm producing another series on the America of the 1950s. Another one is in the sounds and music of the old American West. Or I'm producing another one on the very musical city, Berlin, from the turn of the century all the way to the present, going decade by decade. And these documentaries, they are learned articles, they are scholarly essays, but I try to make them very entertaining so they can be appreciated too. So they have a duality. They are light, entertaining, but very scholarly. And one of the sub-series in which I will be talking now is the Hispanic American songs. By the way, I'm depositing these copies of all of these documentaries in two major archives, in the West Coast at the Stanford Archive and here in New York at the Rodgers and Hammerstein. The previous speaker, Dr. Bursley, gave you a hint of the immense difficulty to do the research for this kind of music. Some of these documentaries, they take a ratio of 1 to 1 or 1 to 2, meaning that for 1 hour of sound, you have to spend 1, 2, or 3 hours of research. Many of them, much of that research is in the type of detective work. In the Hispanic American song that I'm doing, I'm gonna be talking to today, we have to see them in the context of Hispanic and Latin American music, which as you probably know is immense. We have the classical music of Latin America, in Spain the zarzuela. You just heard the immense importance of Latin music in the big band sound of the 1930s and 40s. We have great singers, operatic singers, and now in Latin America we have the new trend called La Nueva Canción, which is basically going back to the roots of Latin American music with a great amount of political contents of social protest in a way related to the liberation theology. As a matter of fact, I have sometimes some very friendly arguments with Latin American friends. They say, what are you spending your time, wasting your time? What you have to do is to study La Nueva Canción. And as I say, yes, it's very important. I have produced a number of documentaries on La Nueva Canción. But let's also don't forget that we have a great tradition of music. So that's the theme I'm going to be talking now, this particular aspect of Hispanic and Latin American popular song that we all know around here. Now, when you grow up, like myself, I come from Chile, in a Latin American country, you hear these songs everywhere. When you come here, you suddenly become aware that they are so popular. In Latin America, we take them for granted. When you come here, you find these songs everywhere. Music, doctor's offices, supermarkets. And then when you begin collecting records like myself, you begin to see that they are very popular too in Europe. They have been translated even to Russian, into Japanese, street organ grinders, and so on. So, to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, I will play you a few excerpts of some of these songs in very unusual arrangements. And you will see there's a sort of a mystique, there's something very, some people have called it magic, mysterious about these songs. Why are they so popular? What have they captured of an ethos in music or in terms of time periods? So here you wanna listen a few of them, and I will announce, by the way, which they are. Let's see, which one?
Play.
That was La Paloma, Spanish Sebastian de Iradier, 1859, by Beer Garden Nickelodeon and by a group of German sailors. Over the Waves, 1888, composed by Juventino Rosa from Mexico when he was 20 years old. By the Chilean Nicanor Molinari, composed in the 1930s, Enric Madriguera, and then the band of the Royal Netherlands Navy.
La mocita de Madrid ya se volvió mujer moderna, pero no ha perdido, no, aquella sal.
El Cielo de Madrid, the original José Padilla, and then the version by Victor Young from Around the World in 80 Days. That some of these songs have been taken all the way from Muzak to the Opera House. That was La Violetera, that was used by Charlie Chaplin in 1930, City Lights, and then sung by Lucrezia Bori in the 1920s. It was composed, by the way, in 1918 by José Padilla. Now, what I'm trying to do in this sub-series of Hispanic and Latin American song is to take each one of them in context. I'm trying to use, as a geographer, a unified approach that the German term Weltanschauung, the overall perspective. What did they represent? Who was the composer? Why they were composed? How they were interpreted, translated, modified, and why, and how they were changed through the decades. Some of them, as you can see, they are over 100 years old. Now, the research for this kind of production is extremely difficult. You got a hint of what Dr. Bursley said, the many pseudonyms, the many ways these composers were hidden. One of the reasons was a sort of a cultural bias. In many of these countries, even though these songs were sold by the millions, and 100 years later they're still popular all over the world, the composers were considered light or popular composers, and they did not merit any inclusion in any large classical music encyclopedia like Groves or Baker's or any other. Some countries like Argentina, in the case of the tango, they are prime examples of superb scholarship. They have in an academy there of the Lunfardo, the language of Buenos Aires. I have a 3-volume encyclopedia of the tango with every composer, songwriter, performer. Mexico also is fairly good. Brazil also, they have put a great importance on their popular music. But you go to other countries, they're virtually nothing. And the research is be as difficult as here as it would be in Latin America. I'm going to give you just 2 examples of the difficulty of this research. One, I was trying to find information on José Lacalle, the composer of Amapola. After many hours of research at UCLA, I found only 1 piece of concrete information. It was the obituary in the New York Times, 4 inches, saying simply that he had born in Spain, had moved to New York, had played with the John Philip Sousa band, had worked with Columbia Records, and had died in 1937. That's all. After many hours of research, last night at the reception, I was talking to some members of ARSC, and they said, well, maybe you should write to so-and-so who knows a little more about him. Maybe you could contact so-and-so in Columbia Records. Maybe you could see this obscure book that was published in Puerto Rico. That will give you an idea of the complexity of this research. I'm going to give you another little anecdote about Nicanor Molinari, who came from my own country, Chile. And he was very famous. His compositions are popular all over the world, not only over Latin America. Some years ago, an elderly Chilean writer said, you know, I'm pretty sure I saw a very good article about him in the magazine, the Chilean magazine, Hoy, today. It was about the middle, late 30s. And that magazine was very prestigious. It was a sort of a combination of the New York Times Magazine, the old Saturday Review, and The Nation. At UCLA, we have a very active program of Latin American studies, and we have a person, a bibliographer, who goes about twice a year to Latin American countries to buy books, periodicals. And some years ago, he had bought in Santiago an almost complete set of this magazine. So I go to the library at UCLA, and there I have about 10, 12 linear feet of this magazine, beautifully bound, perfectly maintained. But you find out that these magazines were never indexed, like hundreds of other titles, you know, of European, Latin American, even American popular magazines. They were never indexed. Well, I said to myself, maybe if I can spend a couple of hours, I will go to the index of each issue. And you open the issues and you find that the general practice in this magazine was never to put an index. You begin with editorial remarks or political comments, and then you go to the articles. So there you can apply the saying, so close and so far away. I just turned away. I could spend days of research just to find one article that he thought maybe was in the magazine. So that was it. So that will give you the hint, you know. Now, my essay, you see, are very scholarly, and at the same time you have to include illustrations. So the Riegler and Deutsch project have been a great blessing. I will end this talk now with a case in point. That very beautiful song by José Padilla, written in 1918, La Violetera, was a sensation, a major sensation in Paris, in the Casino de Paris. And I knew, I have read accounts about that song, that the great creation of this song was by a young Spanish singer who lived in Paris, Raquel Meller. Well, no place you could find recording by her. I exhausted all of the collectors, the contacts, nobody had that. Well, here came the Riegler Deutsch archive. So I contacted Barbara Soka, and she said, let me look at the microfiche. And she found that the recordings were here at the Royce and Hammerstein. So I contacted Don McCormick, and he said, yes, we do have three recordings by her. So I obtained a tape of those three recordings. This will give you an idea of the detective work that is involved in this thing. Other archives that have been very helpful have been UC Santa Barbara, the Library of Congress. So that's why, by the way, you know, I tried to send these documentaries. Richard Perry mentioned that they are broadcast. Broadcasting this thing, you see, is not the appeal too much of National Public Radio or educational radio. So basically, they are broadcast by one station in Santa Monica, KCRW, and I'm trying to send this to, as I say, two major archives, Stanford and the Rogers and Hammerstein, where, by the way, they're being cataloged on Arlene, because my interest is that these documentaries, whether they are on the Hispanic American song, on the or the music of Berlin, or the All American West, or other subjects, or the that I do, for example, I'm doing one about the faces and sounds of new American music. Why somebody like Philip Glass or Terry Riley are so much hated or loved. So anyway, my interest is that this will be deposited. So I try to send them to other archives as much as I can. But anyway, this will give you an idea of the immense amount of research that this documentary represents. Sometimes they represent about 60 hours of research alone, not counting with the production. But anyway, let's go back to this piece with which I will end this discussion. La Violetera, it's very famous. It was the subject of even a parody that was called the Cacahuetera, the seller of cacahuetes, the peanuts. And I'm trying to include that. I located the source of that recording, which I will include also in this documentary that I have in preparation. There are many other fine singers, operatic singers who sang this. So you got the whole range from Muzak to the opera house. So I have read that this great creation was by Raquel Meller. There you find also the problem. I tried to find out who she was, and all what you find is just a little paragraph, and even the date of birth. Some sources say that she was born in Barcelona in 1897, others say that she was born in Madrid in 1893. But anyway, I have found a number of people in Los Angeles. I'm doing my own kind of oral history, not only about this series, but also about the American West, the new American composers. I found a Frenchman who was there when she was singing the song. So I had a long conversation with him, two or three conversations. So from that, about 1 hour, in which we talk only about this particular song, I took the pertinent part, which I will include in this documentary, followed by the version of Raquel Meller, and of the three recordings that I got here from the Royce and Hammerstein, there are two that are magnificent, one early and one later. So to end this discussion, I will play for you now those 3 minutes or so. First, the conversation with this man, Georges Clayet, a French attorney, now in his 80s, who was in Paris, who saw her perform, and then excerpt of these two old recordings from Raquel Meller. So here we'll go now.
You say it was translated into French.
Yeah, it was translated by Chanson de la Marchande de Violettes.
That means the song of the girl who sells violets.
Right. However, it was better known in a French pronunciation of La Violetera, that is, La Violetera, and everybody knew the song under this title. It was shorter, it kept the mark better, probably.
This song was made to a great creation by this singer, Raquel Meller.
That is right. She was on the Casino de Paris. She was in really a star, a vedette, you know, and she sang that song, and it was repeated
many
over
times.
And over again.
You saw her singing there.
Yeah, I saw her singing there, and I remember well, as she sang her song, she distributed violets in a basket, and beautiful violets, in a gentleman here, a lady there, another gentleman, and finally at the end she got the whole contents of the basket out to the whole
audience.
The whole audience, yeah, right. There was no more in her basket, and there was a great ovation and curtain calls.
When she came to sing that famous song, La Violetera, she came in costume, like one of those girls in Spain, in Madrid. She came with the little hat and
the
basket of violets.
She was a violet seller, you know.
And you said also this may serve a little business for the florists, because in the intermission they sold.
That is right. Business is always business. And that during the intermission, there were florists who sold violets similar to those which have been distributed by this Raquel Meller. She was I remember, a little girl. She was a very charming, very petite, we would say. And I saw her perform her song at the Casino de Paris, which was at its heyday, in one of the productions there, and she sang.
And she sang with a great feeling.
A great feeling, yes. She had her very soprano voice, I remember, and quite young voice, you know.
And with a
youthful voice.
And with a lot of expression, of course.
Oh, yes, a lot of expression.
Now you see, do it. You can picture your hair.
En Madrid aparece la violetera que pregonando parecen golondrinas que van criando precursora de primavera en Madrid aparece la violetera que pregonando parecen golondrinas que van fiando llévelo usted señorito que no vale más que un real llévelo usted señorito cómpreme usted este ramito pa' lucirlo en el
So this is a good illustration of what happened, you see, when you combine the actual sound illustrations with the research and with the data, and you produce a single essay in sound about one particular topic. It's forever. That's why I'm so much interested to deposit this in library, because after the spending 50, 60 hours producing this and the correspondence and the acquisition of sound, you try to convey the ethos, the feeling of that time, and then progress, as I say. I don't have time to tell you how I do the documentary or the essay, but I go from the beginning to the present, and I think that I try to give a good feeling of what is all about this particular song. So that would be all from now. Thank you.
I've been asked to announce that there is another session in here during this lunchtime period, so we are asked not to mill about outside. but to be back promptly at 1:30, and we'll start the afternoon session. Thank you.